New Delhi.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thanks, Holly. Thank you very much. What a lovely afternoon it's been here in the Northwest. Lovely and sunny. It's nice. Welcome to the programme, July 29th. Dr. Vernon Coleman back on with me this hour. The filmmaker and investigative journalist Miriam Hinnane joins me live from Costa Rica in hour two. That's not too shabby for a Wednesday.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yeah, that's a good start. You are very welcome, and I do look forward to reading your tweets on Twitter, as usual, at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Two packed hours, as usual. Going to round up the news now for 20 minutes or thereabouts. Some interesting things going on. And as I mentioned, join in. The more the merrier. Wednesday's programme, indeedy. Right. Yes, like I said, it's lovely today. Lovely. Makes a change. But the summer is nearly over. It must be announced. It must be noted. It's over, more or less. And it's been shite thus far. 30 degrees, though, we are promised this coming Friday. 30 degrees on Friday. And then back to shite. And that's proof, if ever you wanted proof, that they have weather machinery jigs. Weather machines. They must have. How could it be crap? And then on Friday, 30 degrees. Costa del Sol, Costa del Salford. And then back to crap on Saturday. They've got the machines. It's the harp, I tell you. Angels don't play that particular harp. Madonna. There were a couple of Madonna tunes in the playlist leading up to the programme today. Madonna has been censured by Instagram. Why? Because she shared a video about coronavirus to her 15 million followers. And it was a video about doctors. It was a video of doctors talking about hydroxychloroquine. So Madonna's post, in it, she claimed, did Madge, that a vaccine for COVID-19 had already been found, but was being hidden to let the rich get richer. So Instagram blurred out the video with a caption saying, false information. How do they know? How does Instagram know whether Madonna is right or not? I'm not sure Madonna is right, but how could they possibly know? And it also directed users to a page debunking the claims in the video that Madonna shared, noting there is no coronavirus vaccine. The video was eventually deleted from Madonna's Instagram page, not before her fans protested loudly at her decision to share the post. You see, you thought I was going to say the fans protested, that Madge was being silenced. No, the fans don't want any fake news about coronavirus, so they supported it. Anyway, Annie Lennox as well. Annie Lennox, who hasn't been relevant since the 1980s, but then maybe Madonna hasn't either. Annie Lennox commented, "This is utter madness. I can't believe that you, Madonna, are endorsing this dangerous quackery. Meow, meow. Pull your claws in there, Annie, with your mad head of hair on you." If Madonna doesn't know the truth about coronavirus, nobody knows. Anyway, the video that was shared by Madonna was the video called America's Frontline Doctors. And it showed the doctor speaking outside the US Supreme Court. And this event was organised by the Tea Party Patriots Action. Dr. Stella Emanuel from Houston said that she'd successfully treated nearly 400 patients with hydroxychloroquine. Now, Jean Ann Crowley posted a link to this video on Facebook. Now, Jean Ann's a very smart woman. Posting a video like that is no endorsement of the video. It's just saying, look, there are some doctors out there saying things. Have a look, you see, that's how it works. And maybe Madonna wasn't endorsing it either. So Jean Ann put it on Facebook, these doctors talking about hydroxychloroquine. And I saw today when I went on Facebook that her post had been deleted and a Facebook message had been posted under it saying that it isn't true. But again, how does Facebook know that these qualified doctors are wrong? How the hell do they know? Jean Ann, you conspiracy conspiratorial minx, you. So that's what's been going on. Billy Gates of Hell, the IT geek, who is still a virgin, I'm convinced of it, I don't care how many children he has basically been amplified by social media while real doctors have been deleted. Now, on saying that, there is a tweet going around that the African-American lady who spoke in the video may have said some rather bizarre things in the past. She has been called a witch doctor, which might just be racism, you know. Anyway, young people, I don't know what young people is. I feel fairly young. Young people might be driving spikes in coronavirus infections across Europe. Said who? Said the WHO. Roger, don't know the World Health Organization. Not Pete Townshend. And they said young people are responsible. Several countries are seeing a higher proportion of new cases among the young. This is some crack. Here's Margaret Harris. We heard from her the other day from the World Health Organization speaking this afternoon to the BBC, the British bullshit corporation.
Well, you know, as we've always said, the virus has continued to transmit. So it's not about one or two waves. It's about stopping a resurgence. Now, you can understand people came out of lockdown. The weather became lovely. Unfortunately, in many people's minds, it was something that was past. It was never past. It was always there. The trouble is learning to navigate this new world we're in. It's not back to normal.
There you are. It's always there. It's never going away. We have to learn to navigate the new world.
Past. It was always there.
Always there.
There. The trouble is learning to navigate this new world we're in. It's not back to normal. It's back to the new, finding the new normal, ways to live with this virus to prevent it from rising, the transmission from rising.
Yeah.
How do we do that? Because as you say...
Listen to the presenter. Unbelievable. I mean, she heard a tidal wave of horse shit there. And this is what I said before. It's a dance between these World Health Organization people and the BBC journalists. It's all scripted. No, nobody's going to ask any questions. They're just going to go to the next bullet point. How do we do it then? And allow her to speak without any interruption, without any challenge.
For a lot, it does feel like life is kind of back to normal. And it's quite hard then to get your head around going back to tighter restrictions that we all just went into at the beginning without question because it was an unprecedented situation.
That's quite right. And those measures were taken because at that stage you had transmission everywhere throughout the community. So this was just like a massive form of social distancing that was done to bring that transmission down. So now's the moment not to waste all that effort. And indeed, my Director General outlined very clearly what can be done. First thing is to know your epidemiology. So when...
We have to know our epidemiology, all of us.
So when he said test, 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 way back many, many months ago now, he wasn't just saying it because it sounded good.
Yeah, she goes on to say that everybody needs to be tested. There are so many issues with that, I won't get into it, namely the collection of the nation's DNA, which is one big part of this, which isn't getting a lot of discussion. Everybody needs to be tested. Everybody needs to have the app so that you can be beeped some afternoon when you're going about your business and told to get home and get in and stay in. Anyway, what else did she say before we move on from her?
And, of course, the standard things that we've been saying over and over, the hand washing.
Wash your hands. Because we never washed our hands before, did we?
The genuine social distancing. Spend your time outdoors. Try not to spend your time indoors. If you're going to socialise, still socialise without being physically together.
Socialise without being physically together.
This virus loves the fact that we love being with each other.
The virus loves the fact that we love being with each other. This is real cutting edge science, this.
How would you rate where the UK government is now on the test and trace?
Oh, piss off, you useless wench of a presenter. I don't have much to my name, but I'll give everything I have to the one presenter on national television that has the courage to sacrifice themselves to destroy these Muppets like Margaret Harris. Imagine what I would do to Margaret Harris. I mean, you've been listening to me for years. You imagine what I would do to that woman, given 5 minutes on air with her, talking about the virus loves the fact that we love being together. I mean, give me a fucking break! You know? How can you sit there and say nothing? Twiddle your thumbs. How can you do it? Anyway, very important news this morning. The Public Accounts Committee has, well, savaged the UK government for allowing people to leave hospitals and go to care homes without being tested for COVID or anything else. A catastrophic mistake, if you believe it was a mistake, that has killed tens of thousands of senior citizens. The Public Accounts Committee accused the government of being slow to support social care and that it was a catastrophic error, as I said, reckless, the MP said. So the Public Accounts Committee is a cross-party committee and they went for the government. Brought out to defend the government this morning is Oliver Dowden, the Culture Secretary. Here he is rejecting the characterisation offered by the Public Accounts Committee. Here he is saying, I don't agree with it, on Sky News with Neil Paterson this morning.
Well, I don't actually accept that characterisation. First of all, this idea that we were mass discharging people from hospitals into care homes is not the case. Actually, there were fewer people.
But it is the case.
People discharged from hospitals into care homes between February and April. 40%.
We still did it, though. And the Public Accounts Committee makes it pretty clear they thought that that was an appalling error. Shockingly, government policy up to and including April the 15th was not to test all patients discharged for COVID-19. We knew well ahead of that that asymptomatic transmission was possible.
Well, actually, of course, in response to challenges we've had in the care home sector, and we were clear that we had those challenges. That's why, for example, we have introduced testing of all residents in care homes and of all staff.
Which the care home sector loves. I'm really sorry to push you on this, Minister.
I'm really sorry to push you on this. What are you saying sorry to him for, you moron? Eviscerate him. Take him to the cleaners, man. It's not often you get a chance like that as a presenter on breakfast television. Ruin the man. Christ, he's lying through his teeth. I'm sorry to press you. Holy God.
The fact is, you know, a group of MPs on the PAC have described this policy as an appalling error. I'm looking from someone from government to at least acknowledge that.
To give Neil Paterson his due, he's fairly polite. He seems to be a decent bloke, but come on.
Well, look, we will look at the report carefully. I understand people's concerns about care homes. We have said that we will...
Vernon Coleman called this an extermination. He'll be on the programme in 10 minutes. We'll put it to him again. Scandalous. Cathy Gardner is a GP, by the way, dear listener. And she's also a councillor. She's a politician as well. Lots of GPs in politics these days. Rather strange, but we might talk about that another day. She's a councillor in East Devon. She's a GP. Her father died in a care home. She's suing the government. Cathy Gardner.
My father died in a care home in the 3rd of April, but he became ill in March, actually quite early on in the pandemic. And I then became aware of the discharge of patients from hospitals, not just without testing, but actually with no regard at all for the status of their condition. So it didn't even matter whether they'd tested positive or not. I'm now convinced from the research that my lawyers have done for the call for judicial review that this wasn't the only mistake or error or deliberate step that the government took. I don't think the Public Accounts Committee report has gone far enough. The evidence against the government in this is absolutely damning. They did not protect the most vulnerable in society, and I want to know why.
Good stuff.
Well, the government has said, first of all, that its priority was to protect the National Health Service, and that meant discharging people. And secondly, they said...
We wanted to protect the National Health Service, so we took a load of geriatrics out of hospitals and fucked them into care homes and locked the door on them and kept them in there, not tested them for anything, didn't give them any instructions as to how they could protect themselves and improve their health, give themselves the best chance. And we want you to believe that it was just a mistake, yeah.
Say that it wasn't known at the time that people could be infectious with the virus asymptomatically, as they call it?
Well, that's absolutely untrue. It's not unusual for people to be infectious before they develop symptoms or even without showing symptoms at all.
Yes.
This is common knowledge. It happens with the common cold. So anybody who knows anything about infectious diseases knows that asymptomatic spread. There was evidence of asymptomatic spread with this virus in January. So I'm afraid what the government is saying is just not borne out by the facts, and it's not borne out by the facts in their own documents.
And she's suing the government. That will be interesting. 18 and a half minutes past the hour. This is your Richie Allen Show. It is live this Wednesday, July 29th, 2020. Vernon Coleman in a few minutes, and Miriam Hennane live from Costa Rica in hour two of the programme. Yeah. I tell you what, despite all of this coronavirus stuff, I'm glad that the important news stories haven't been buried by COVID. There's some important things going on, like this from BBC News 24 today. This made me giggle.
Exeter Chiefs are discussing a potential rebrand that would see the Premiership leaders removing their Native American badge and mascot, the mascot known as Big Chief.
Big Chief.
Decision will be made by board members this afternoon. Our sports news correspondent, Laura Scott, has been following the story.
Yeah, Exeter Chiefs is a Premiership rugby union team. They've been called the Chiefs since 1999. Their logo is a headdress, a chief and a headdress. And apparently it's terrible. Apparently it's real racism. And they need to change their name and not call themselves the Chiefs and not use that mascot anymore, because they're offending the UK's massive Native American population, allegedly.
This was raised back in 2016 as a potential issue, but it has
a potential issue.
But it has gathered pace in the last few weeks, and there have been rival petitions launched. There's one that has more than 3,000 signatures saying that they think that the imagery of the Big Chief mascot and the club logo, which has the Big Chief on it, and the sort of chants of the tomahawk chop are harmful.
The chants of the tomahawk chop are harmful.
They say that it's that there are accusations of racism and they would like there to be a rebrand. But then there's another petition which has more than 5,000 signatures, which says that there should be no change and that the fans are respectful of Indigenous groups. So it's a very emotive subject. We are expecting there to be a decision made at some point this afternoon. Whether or not that's communicated today or tomorrow, we don't yet know. But we understand that they are canvassing the opinions of fans, players and sponsors, because clearly there could be a commercial fallout to this as well. And I've spoken to one sponsor of the club who said that they welcome this debate. But yes, it's very much a controversial subject and of course impacted by what's happened in America, where Washington's NFL side has temporarily renamed themselves Washington Football Team from the Washington Redskins and dropped their Redskins branding.
And dropped the branding. Anybody know any Native Americans living in the UK? Anybody? Anybody? Anybody know any Native Americans in the United States who follow English Premiership Rugby Union? Because if you find a Native American gentleman or lady who supports a UK-based Premiership Rugby Union team and they're upset at the branding of the Exeter Chiefs, I'll admit that I was in the wrong and I'll accept they should change their name. This is mad. 22 minutes past the hour. Dr. Vernon Coleman will be with me shortly. Miriam Hennane in the second hour. Do tweet the programme. It'll be good to hear from you this afternoon. Why are the vast majority buying into the lies spouting from the windholes of the Tory regime, says Base Ninja. They are known liars, published liars. I'm convinced if the government announced washing in cat's milk would help, the majority would go out a milking, he says. Maybe you're right. Hi to Helen Davies. Hi to Charlie. Hi to Stephen Gibb. Talking about censorship, YouTube was at it too. I uploaded it to my channel and it was removed 2 hours later. On appeal, I was told anything that conflicts with the World Health Organization narrative would contravene YouTube guidelines and therefore would be removed, says Stephen Gibb. Thanks for your tweet, Stephen. All righty. Yes. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show, the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. Here's the Lightning Seeds, a song called Change, back in a couple of minutes with none other than Dr. Vernon Coleman. Lightning Seeds on the Richie Allen Radio Show. 25 minutes past the hour, the northwest of the UK drive time. And I'm thrilled to welcome back to the programme a friend of ours these days, an international best-selling author, a former practicing GP of great distinction, a national newspaper columnist, and the host these days of the enormously popular YouTube channel, An Old Man in a Chair, which gathers viewers and subscribers by the thousands on a weekly basis. Hugely popular and very important these days, despite the fact that he's being censored regularly. We're going to talk in the next 30 minutes or 35 minutes or thereabouts about a number of things. The masks, we'll talk about fake news on mainstream media, and we'll talk about vaccines as well. It's a huge welcome back, a warm welcome to the one and only Dr. Vernon Coleman. Vernon, thanks so much again for sharing some of your time with us. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Richie. And congratulations on your wonderful picture of Nicola Sturgeon today. I thought that was magnificent.
Oh, you noticed it, did you? All right. I'm a big child, Vern. I'm a big child. I should be more mature than that. But if you're endorsing it, well, maybe it's okay. Maybe I can get away with it. Thanks so much for that.
I think we have to laugh a little bit these days. Otherwise, we'd go absolutely triple insane.
We have to laugh. Now, you suggested earlier on, and I wouldn't allow anybody else except you do this. You suggested that you've got a 10-point fact summary about COVID that you want to get into, and the floor will be yours in a moment to do that. I'm all ears. I can't wait to hear that. But before we talk about that, I'd like to get your reaction, because it's vindication of sorts. The Public Accounts Committee, in a scathing critique of this government, said that the decision to allow or to take people from hospitals, to free up hospitals, send them to care homes, where a lot of people died, was a catastrophic error. You've been saying that, sir, for a long time. Would you like to comment on that?
I wonder whether the government will actually take any notice of it. The moving people into care homes was mass murder. It was a form of genocide, because they should have known that all those people were going to die. And it didn't just happen in one country, it happened all around the world. So it's very difficult not to assume that this was a deliberate plan, because you can't say, well, they were a bit sloppy in the UK, they were a bit sloppy in America, they were a bit sloppy. You can't. I mean, it's just stupid. Of course they knew what they were doing. And it was an attempt, I think, to boost up the death rate. Because when you take away, the death figures in care homes is something around 27,000 unfortunate souls, most of whom died alone and frightened, without priests, without relatives and so on. If you take that away from the figure that they now give for the total number of deaths in the UK, you're left with about 20,000, which I know that's awfully sad, but it's a hell of a lot less than you might expect from a reasonably bad flu in 1 year. Everything they have said and done has been a lie, and the lies just keep on coming. Every time you pick up a stone, you find more nasty creatures looking at you, more nasty lies. It's just absolutely the guy Gates yesterday. I discovered. Do you know Gates has been messing around with genetically modified mosquitoes?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
You know, it went wrong.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, these are the things we discuss on programmes like this. Sadly, you only hear that sort of discussion on programmes like this, but you can remind our listeners now.
Well, he got some genetically modified mosquitoes, planning, so he said, that they would kill themselves, die out. But in fact, what's happened is they've just got worse than ever. So now we've got all these mad genetically modified mosquitoes flying around. Gates has also got trying to black out the sun so that we have very little sunshine, working on the bizarre basis of stopping non-existent climate change. And also, you have to remember, of course, Gates has got all these meat-making factories, artificial meat. So you don't have to get very far to link A to B. And, of course, he's demanded and got indemnification for the drug companies with all these zillions of vaccines that they're making. And so taxpayers are going to pay the costs, because people do not seem to know that vaccines cause an amazing amount. I'm sorry, I'm segueing here all over the place, but then they cause an amazing amount of trouble. The in America, the American government has paid out over $4 billion to people who've been damaged by vaccines. The UK has a standard payout for some vaccines of £120,000. If you get severely damaged by the vaccine, they'll give you £120,000 and tell you to shut up.
Yeah, that's
now,
right.
How can they then say there is nothing wrong with vaccines? If there's nothing wrong, why are they doling out so much money to people who've been injured by them?
And we will definitely come back to vaccines, because the government bought or agreed to buy 60 million doses of a vaccine from Sanofi and Glaxo, bringing to a total of 250 million doses overall across four different deals. Dr. Vernon Coleman is our guest. We will definitely get into that. Now, you said that you wouldn't mind getting 3 minutes to talk a little bit about what you know to be 10 indisputable facts, or a 10-point indisputable fact summary, which will kind of, I suppose, help people who maybe are on the fence or don't understand what's really going on or have only ever gotten their information from the BBC. And you believe that this 10-point summary demolishes the fiasco. So I'm going to say over to you there. It's important, this. Go ahead, Vernon.
It's very simple. All the facts can be verified, not just on my website, but if you just hunt around on the internet. Number one, many doctors, including Dr. Fauci, the American coronavirus supremo, have admitted that the risk of dying with the coronavirus is similar to the risk of dying with the flu. Number two, the flu can kill over 600,000 people a year around the world. Even though governments everywhere have admitted fiddling their totals, the UK is just appalling, the COVID-19 death total is still nowhere near a global flu total. The only conclusion is that the coronavirus isn't as big a killer as the flu. And number three, here's how they fiddled the figures. In the UK, anyone who tested positive for the coronavirus and then died subsequently, weeks, months later, was officially a COVID-19 death, whatever else they had wrong with them. If they got run over by a bus, but they'd been tested and proved positive, then they died of COVID-19 and not the bus. Number four, the vast majority of those dying with the coronavirus were over 80 and had many other health problems. The risk for fit young individuals is very small. The risk for children is smaller than the risk of being hit by lightning. If you're going to put kids in masks, you should take the masks off and give them a lightning rod, because that would do them more good. Number five, research has shown, whatever the BBC fact checkers say, research has shown, I believe, that masks are dangerous, don't prevent the spread of infection, and almost certainly do more harm than good. The virus can go straight through the material of a mask, and mask wearing affects blood oxygen levels. At least two people, they were in China, but two people have died through wearing masks. I've quoted all the figures and the papers, and there's tons of figures and papers, including a very good paper in the British Medical Journal. Number six, many of those promoting the coronavirus horror story are linked either to the vaccine industry or the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Valance, the chief scientific advisor, was formerly a chief senior executive at GSK, which you've just said is providing one of the vaccines for us. How nice and handy that is. Number seven, the British government has admitted that at least four times as many people have died as a result of the lockdowns as will have died from the coronavirus. The remedy's been much deadlier than the disease, and it's going to be a lot more than four times because of all the cancer treatments not been done. Number eight, Neil Ferguson, the man whose predictions led to the lockdowns, has produced a number of inaccurate predictions. His track record is appalling. The college where he works has financial links to Bill and Melinda Gates and vaccines. Number nine, exactly the same mistakes have been made in every country in the world. The thing we were talking about earlier on, with the old people being taken out of hospital and dumped in care homes. That could not be a lot of coincidences all around the world. If you remove the care home deaths from the UK total, you end up with 20,000 deaths. And that's a massive exaggeration, because they included flu and anyone who tested positive. Number 10, the number of people who've caught the coronavirus worldwide is now said to be around 10 million. And everybody's getting in a flap, but the flu can affect 1 billion in a year. That's it. 10 simple facts. And you can't contradict any of them. You can suppress them. I had another YouTube video taken down a few minutes ago. You can suppress them, but you can't deny them. All those facts are accurate. And when you look at them, you think, why is anybody wearing a mask? Why does anyone believe a word the government says?
It's amazing you're talking about the suppression of your videos. Now, I know this to be true. First of all, you wouldn't come on here and say it if it wasn't true. I know that. I know you've had videos deleted. The pop singer Madonna, amongst others, shared a link to a group, to a video which showed a group of doctors in the United States yesterday. Basically, many of them echoing some of the points you made there, others talking about this hydroxychloroquine drug. Now, for me as a journalist, it doesn't matter whether these doctors, men and women, are right or wrong. The fact is they're doctors and they've earned the right to their medical opinion. There's been a massive takedown globally of these videos, no matter who posts them, with Facebook putting a little caveat then under the blocked video saying that this is untrue. And I wonder how many people, Vernon, Dr. Vernon Coleman is our guest, by the way, how many people are asking the question, what does Facebook know about it? What does Twitter or Instagram know about it? Surely these doctors, whether right or wrong, have earned the right to say, this is what we think has been going on. This is sinister in the extreme, isn't it?
It's amazing because it's a total suppression of free speech. For years and years, I've offered to debate with the chief medical officer of health, whoever he is. And the other day on the video channel, I offered to debate with Hancock. Now, why won't they debate? Why won't they say, oh, come on, let's go into a national TV studio and debate whether vaccines are any good, for example. I will happily debate with Hancock or Whitty. Why won't they debate with me? Because they'll lose the debate, and then they've lost the whole game. That's why they won't debate, because they're chicken. The fact is that about all these takedowns, the one that YouTube took down today was called Your Body and Mind Aren't Enough. They Want Your Soul.
Yeah.
That was the title of it, and I read it afterwards, and I cannot see for the life of me what there is in there that they don't like, apart from the fact that it's critical of the whole regime as it is at the moment. But go back into vaccines for a moment. Listen to this. This is one of the things that I would say to Hancock if he would dare debate with me on national TV. Live, I would say that the tests they're doing on vaccines, they're probably only going to test on a few hundred people. They've got rid of the animal experiments, jolly good, because I don't like them, but they're going to test on a few hundred. Now, most of the serious side effects that you get with vaccines only occur on, say, 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 10,000. So if you test your vaccine on 200 people, say, the vaccine, they will be able to say, oh, it's terribly safe, it's wonderful. None of those 200 people died or got brain damage or had seizures or whatever. Then they are going to roll the vaccine out to 7 billion people. But what if the vaccine, say, kills 1 in 1,000? Bill Gates talked about 1 in 10,000. Okay, 1 in 10,000. Now, say the 1 in 10,000 dies. That's 700,000 people dead as a result of this vaccine, and they won't know until they put it out because they only tested it on 200 people.
Yeah.
If it's 1 in 1,000, then you've got 7 million people dead. Now, why people get terribly excited about fridges catching fire or tumble dryers catching fire, but in fact the number of people who can get seriously injured by a vaccine is far greater. In other words, if you buy a tumble dryer, you're far less likely to have a fire in your kitchen than if you have, say, a kid vaccinated and they have all these different vaccines put into them. The risk adds up with all these different things because nobody ever checks to see what happens when you have 30 different vaccines put into a growing body. People get hysterical about tumble dryers and fridges, but nobody gives a damn about vaccines. And Boris Johnson calls people like me nuts.
Yeah.
Well, actually, debate with me then, Boris. Come on the telly. Destroy me. Maybe look like a fool, because you know damn well you can't, because the problems with vaccines are massive, and they're all suppressed. And when you do a YouTube video or whatever, I'm banned from Facebook. I never even got on there. They banned me before I started.
Before you started. Wow.
But YouTube takes down videos. Now, why are they not allowing a debate? You know, I will debate with any of these people, Boris, Hancock, Whitty, as long as it's live so they can't mess around with it, and as long as it's national, because if we're going to do it, do it.
I have the answer, Vernon. I have the answer. I know what's happened, and I think you know what's happened as well. A couple of years ago, a friend of mine at the BBC sent me an internal memo, and I went public with it, at least as far as I can on this radio programme. But to be fair, a couple of weeks later, the Daily Mail ran with it, and so did the Guardian. A couple of years ago, the BBC sent an email, a directive to every one of its production staff, the men and women who produce all of their programmes, and they basically said that on things like climate change and vaccine importance and safety, they said the science is settled. The science is settled. There isn't any need anymore to try and find any balance. And that was obviously a big deal for me at the time, and I had some people on talking about climate change, scientists, of course, and I said, wow, the BBC will now never again invite you to come on as the geologist who is sceptical about climate change or the meteorologist because they've decided the science is settled. And it's the same on vaccines. So when our listeners are watching Sky News and they can't understand why the presenter doesn't dive in on some bullshit speaker, excuse my language, talking nonsense, it's because they have been told not to. Specifically, do not go there, the science is settled. And it might be harmful to allow these discussions because Johnny and Mary in County Cork might not get a vaccine and then they might die. That's how sinister it is. They've said the science is settled. Would you believe it?
Yeah, I would believe it. I know it's true. The fact is that I'm trying to pull them out of the woodwork by saying, look, if I am wrong, you can make me look stupid, can't you? But if I am right, I'll make you look stupid. And they aren't prepared to risk that because they know damn well that the evidence, all I have to say, to be honest, is, look, why did America pay over $4 billion to people who'd been damaged by vaccines? Why has the British government been handing out huge amounts of money for many, many, for decades to people who are damaged by vaccines if the vaccines are safe? The vaccines don't even work a lot of the time. This is all about, with vaccines, it's all, and you, this radio program's going to get taken off before very long. If you look at it, what's happening is that they're just trying to get herd immunity because they think that reduces the costs of the community. That makes a profit for the government, in other words. They can hand out all this money. And don't forget, the government is now indemnifying all the vaccine manufacturers. Why did Bill Gates want the vaccine manufacturers indemnified? Because he knows damn well that there's going to be risks and there's going to be huge amounts of damages. So taxpayers are going to pay the cost, not only of all these vaccines, which the governments are subsidizing, and governments aren't going to share in the profits. The drug companies will make the profits. This all stinks to high heaven. And the other thing that just occurred to me about climate change is that if you look at the Club of Rome published a book in 1991, I think it was. Yeah, 1991, I think. And the book was called The First Global Revolution. This was prior to Agenda 21 from the United Nations. And they admitted to inventing climate change as a common enemy of mankind in order to unite the world. Their words. Now, of course, climate change goes back to the 19th century, although most of the people who now talk about it haven't got the faintest idea about it. But it was deliberately used as a ploy to start off Agenda 21 and all the rubbish we're going through now with masks and a cashless society, which incidentally people think, oh gosh, that's wonderful, not having to bother with cash. You wait for the future. If you look at the Department of Energy's notes on smart meters, they say these are very useful because we can cut people off. We can cut off their electricity if they use too much, or presumably if they're annoying the world, if they're called Richie or Vernon or whatever, and they're a nuisance, we can cut off their electricity. Isn't that handy? Don't you think they'll do the same with cards, with credit cards and so on? Of course they will. Once they've got rid of cash, everyone is vulnerable. You can have your supply of cash cut off because they'll cut off your card and then you can't buy any food, just the same as they're trying to do with these silly masks, which cause so much illness and which people wear with... There are all these fashion masks now. You know, the pretty ones to match your blouse or your shirt or whatever.
Yeah, that's right.
People have gone stark raving mad. They're wearing a symbol of slavery, and then at the same time they're protesting about slavery that happened 100, 200 years ago or whatever, taking down statues of Cecil Rhodes, but they don't realise that they're becoming slaves for the future.
The irony is thick, isn't it? Dr. Vernon Coleman is our guest, an old man in a chair. Subscribe to it on YouTube before it's taken down. A series of brilliant videos, basically lectures from Vernon about what's been happening, but much deeper than just coronavirus, where he feels this is all ultimately heading. We talked about cashless society in the past. That's hugely important. And just because you mentioned the smart meters, let me remind our listeners. If you own your own house, or if, like me, you're saddled with a mortgage, you're still entitled to ask your energy company to take a smart meter out of your property if one exists. If it doesn't, and they are ringing you to tell you that you must have one, your rights are clearly that you don't have to have one. When we moved into this house in Salford, which we've mortgaged, there was a smart meter there. It took us a while of threatening and screaming and ranting, but eventually it was taken out. The thing was disabled. You don't have to have one of those things, because what Dr. Vernon Coleman just said is true. This is all about the Internet of Things and monitoring you in your own house and deciding that you've used too much electricity, deciding that you're eating too much red meat, deciding that you're using too much running water and that you're a bad citizen and that you have bad habits. And this goes to social crediting as well. These are mad times. Let me ask you, while we have you on, Dr. Vernon's going to be with us till around about the top of the hour, maybe a couple of minutes after that. It must be for somebody like you and your experience as a journalist, broadcast, the media. I know we've just touched on the media, but just to come back to it, the lockstep is a word that we hear quite a lot. Even yourself, with your experience, are you absolutely flabbergasted at the fact that outside of the likes of, say, Peter Hitchens, maybe one or two people writing for The Spectator, but apart from those people, nobody in the media is asking the government any questions whatsoever, as they tell us that a second wave is inevitable, or that we might be hitting it right now, or that we might have to keep all of this going till the middle of next year. Not a peep, Vernon. From a single journalist in mainstream media, not a peep.
It's sad, isn't it? It's depressing. I mean, I forecast a couple of months ago they would have to have a second wave to keep us under control. But it's so sad. It's sad that doctors haven't spoken up. If 100 doctors, I mean, there are thousands of doctors. Most doctors, you have to be really stupid. Most doctors know that this isn't a major killer plague disease. They know that. If 100 of them threaten to resign, what are they going to do? They can't sack them all. If 100 of them wrote to the papers couldn't ignore the letters because it would be just too much. Yeah. I'm sad that doctors haven't spoken up, and I'm sad, as a former columnist for most of the national press, I'm sad that the journalists aren't asking questions. They aren't saying, well, look, hang on a minute, this isn't right. Hang on, those 10 points that I gave you earlier on, those are all solid, indisputable facts. When you look at those 10 points, how can you possibly not understand that this is the scam of all scams? Back in the, I think it was the middle of March when I did my first YouTube video, just because I was so incensed, and I called it the coronavirus hoax. And it is a hoax. At the time, I didn't realize that there was anything behind the hoax. But when you look at the facts, the numbers of people who've died, the numbers of people who've got the disease, the sort of people who've died from it, 80% or so of the deaths have been people over 80 who had a pile of comorbidities. Now, obviously, if you sent somebody into a nursing home or a care home who'd got the flu, a lot of those people would die of the flu because they'd already got heart disease, respiratory disease, and so on. So it's madness. Oh, and another thing just comes to mind, top of my head. You're talking about having a smart meter taken out, you don't have to pay the BBC TV license. There are ways around it. You have to pay it if you're going to watch BBC, if you're going to watch the television, because otherwise you go to prison. But there are ways to avoid having to pay it. I'm talking about legal ways. I'm not encouraging anybody to break the law, heaven forbid. But there are legal ways to avoid having to pay the TV license, and I think everybody should try and do that to stop giving money to the BBC, which is surely the most corrupt broadcasting organisation. They take money from the European Union and then spend an enormous amount of time and energy opposing Brexit. They take money from Bill and Melinda Gates and won't let anybody talk about vaccines and vaccination when the evidence about it, about the problems which exist, are absolutely massive. The fact that you are going to give all those millions of vaccinations to millions of people, maybe once, twice, three, four times a year, because now they're arguing that you don't get immunity from the disease once you've had it, and it only lasts for 3 months, so you could see this coming a mile off. So you're going to have your vaccine four times a year and take the risks, whatever they might be, because we won't know four times a year. Come on, Matt Hancock, show some balls. Let's have a nice big debate on television.
Absolutely.
Matt Hancock can say that vaccines are wonderful and safe and effective, and I'll say the opposite, and then we'll have a public vote, and then the government will decide what to do on the basis of the public vote. Fat chance.
Fat chance is right, and you make that point about Gates and the BBC. Gates likes to donate to media organisations designated by him as trusted sources, ironically. And when he was on Sunday Breakfast about 9 weeks ago on the BBC, that was about the worst example. I used to do some coaching with presenters, would-be presenters and producers. I've never held myself up as a great example of a radio presenter, and I'm not being modest, I'm just being a realist, but I know how the job should be done. And Gates is on BBC Sunday Breakfast, and he's talking about indemnifying British institutions that might produce a vaccine like Oxford. And I could see the look come on the presenter's face. And I could see on his lips was swine flu and narcolepsy. And he didn't say it. And I thought, this is miserable. All you have to do your job is say to Bill Gates, well, a lot of our viewers wouldn't want the vaccine companies indemnified, Mr. Gates, because the swine flu vaccine caused a lot of harm. It's all he had to do, Vernon. But he didn't. He just sat there and kept his mouth shut. Sick.
Absolutely, because the BBC wouldn't let him. But in fact, what he should have done is to have asked the question and then let them sack him. People have got no guts anymore. What the hell happened? We've become a nation of complete wimps. People are so terrified of upsetting somebody or upsetting their employer or getting into trouble. It's like all these doctors say, oh, I can't speak out because I'll get into trouble. Well, maybe it's easier for me because I've been in trouble all my life, but people have to have the courage. I mean, we're a country who fought two world wars. I mean, we're not going to, nobody in this country seems to want to fight the third world war, the war to end all wars, which is the one we're battling at the moment with all these lies and corruption and deceit and endless nonsense that we're being told. People happily seem to wear their masks and they get upset if you haven't got your mask on. I don't know. What the devil's wrong with people? The evidence shows. The BBC did a fact-checking thing on masks, which I did a video about, and they concluded that the paper or cloth masks will not lead to hypoxia. Well, actually, if you look at the evidence, they do. They do lead to hypoxia.
Do you want to explain what hypoxia... Sorry to interrupt you, Dr. Vernon. Do you want to explain for our listeners what hypoxia is?
Yeah, sorry. It's just if you have low blood oxygen because you're not breathing very well because you've got a mask over your face, and the World Health Organization said it should be quite close-fitting. Now, if you have a close-fitting mask, there are a whole range of problems because you're not getting oxygen as well as you could. And people have done tests with oximeters. You know those little meters, you clip them on your finger and you can test how much oxygen there is in your blood.
Yeah.
They've done tests on that and they've found that there's less oxygen in the blood if you've been wearing a mask all day. And there was a bloke in America the other day, a car driver who collapsed and drove into something because he was wearing a mask, and the police concluded it was because he was wearing a mask. If you wear them, then you don't get enough oxygen and you get woozy. So that's pretty dangerous if you're doing a job of any kind, or if you're even just standing up, you get woozy and you fall over, and you get more carbon dioxide in your body as well as having too little oxygen. Now, these are serious problems that you can get with wearing a mask. There are all the psychological problems as well, which are quite severe. But the physical problems are enough. Two Chinese boys, I can't remember how old they were, young teenagers, I think, and they were running around a running track, and they'd both got masks on and died. They died, and it was concluded they died of heart attacks because their bodies weren't getting enough oxygen. So, and why do you think the government says if you've got any sort of respiratory problem, you should not wear a mask?
Yeah, that's right.
Children under 11 shouldn't wear a mask. People who are ill in some way shouldn't wear a mask. Why does the government say that? Because they know that the mask will impede your breathing. I mean, that alone is proof that wearing a mask is bad for you. The fact that the government says you can be excused boots, you don't have to wear your mask if you've got a respiratory problem, right?
My doctor said as much to me. I've got asthma, but it doesn't bother me at all, the asthma, because never smoked and I'm very fit. But that's right, that was the advice coming from my surgery. Can I go back to the doctor's thing again? I mean, you made the point yourself that in your situation now, I don't think it's easy for you to do what you're doing, but I hear you when you say it might be a little easier. But I think a lot of doctors, they look at, say, Dr. Marcus de Bruin, who's based in Dublin and is a vocal opponent of the lockdown and the mask, like yourself. And like yourself, he's a charismatic man, very, very good speaker. And Marcus has basically come to the conclusion that he might end up leaving medicine. But he's been hammered in Ireland by the Irish press. And, you know, they've attempted to embarrass him and the broadcast media. So I think doctors look at that. Because I know that there are many men and women in medicine. I know it in my bones that they look up to people like you. They know who people like you are and they agree with you. And they think this is dreadful. This is dreadful nonsense. And it's going to cause far more health problems in the future. The lockdown itself, as you alluded to earlier on. But then they look at what happened to Marcus de Bruin and they think, you know what? Got a couple of teenage kids in school. I've got a house. I'm just going to shut my mouth. And I know it's not the most noble thing in the world to do, to shut your bloody mouth, but I can kind of forgive them for it, you know.
But no, Richie, you have to do what's the right thing. I resigned from the health service when they insisted that I put sick notes, diagnoses on sick notes, because it wasn't fair to patients. I've told this story before, but I that's why I resigned from the health service. I resigned from a column with the People newspaper that were paying me a fairly large amount of money. I resigned from that because they wouldn't let me print a column about the Iraq war. I know what it means to resign. I know the difficulty of it, and I know the problems I've had. I mean, once I started on writing about and doing these little YouTube things, the internet became even more full of crap and lies about me. Wikipedia took, whoever was messing around with Wikipedia took down anything that was potentially nice about me and put all sorts of absolute deceits and rubbish on there, saying that I'd done all sorts of things that the ASA had found me guilty for. Well, the ASA, the Advertising Standards Authority, tried to ban a book. They can't ban anything. It's a private organization. They tried to ban a book I'd written about foods in which I'd said that meat can cause cancer. And they refused, the ASA refused to look at the 26 scientific papers I'd sent them which proved that meat caused cancer, and said, oh, well, no, we don't want to look at the scientific papers. We're just going to fine for the meat trade because they don't like your book until you can't advertise it anymore. And that ended up as Wikipedia, as me having been found guilty by the ASA as some sort of heinous crime from an important organisation. That's how they do it. That's how they demonise people. And they will always do that because they want to stop you. The only way they can do it is by making you look silly or by making sure that you can't get any exposure or whatever, or by taking down videos. Well, that's, you know, if they want to fight, then we just have to keep fighting, don't we, Richie? Otherwise, what are you going to do with your life? You're just going to lie there and let people stomp all over your head?
Yeah. If people like you didn't exist, there wouldn't be any program like this. I mean, this program only... No, it's true. It only survives because there are men and women that do have the balls to put their heads above the parapet, you know? I mean,
well,
and that's a fact, and I'm not buttering you up. I have the utmost admiration for you and for Marcus. And Jean-Anne Crowley, my great friend, was a big help to me on this programme, is in Cleggan on the west of Ireland at the moment, and she says Andrew Kaufman has lost his job, you know, for saying what he said. And maybe some of these doctors who went public in America, maybe some of them will put themselves into harm's way. But look, ultimately I do agree with you. I was just being the devil's advocate. Yes, you should stand up. People need to stand up, and if that means, you know, that there are consequences financially, well, trust the universe. Trust the universe, you know. People will look after you, ultimately.
Get on with it. You can't allow yourself. I mean, I have the utmost respect for Peter Ebdon.
Marvellous man.
Snooker player. What a brave fellow. He's about the only celebrity I can think of who's actually stood up. Lewis Hamilton the other day put a... I don't know what they call them, some Insta something, gram, whatever it is, up about vaccines. And he got a few complaints, and within seconds or he was taking it down and saying, oh, well, Bill Gates is a wonderful fellow.
Imagine
I really
that.
Do admire him. Oh, for God's sake.
Have some courage.
Have some balls.
Like. And you know, Peter, you mentioned Peter there. Peter recently began commentary for the BBC, and... I'm not just saying this now because Peter was on the programme. I'm not as shallow as that. But he was brilliant as a new commentator because the BBC has used largely the same commentators for years, and I'm a huge snooker fan. And he was a real breath of fresh air. But he would have known Peter when he expressed how it is that he feels about the virus, that he might be jeopardising any future work, but he went ahead and did it anyway. That takes a bit of balls. And I would echo what you said there. Great admiration for the man's courage. An Old Man in a Chair is the YouTube channel. VernonColeman.com is the website. I'm going to give you the final word, Doctor. I know you're not practicing anymore, but out of respect, you are Dr. Vernon Coleman. You're our Dr. Vernon Coleman. Last word to you.
Just Vernon, please.
Just Vernon. Well, do you hold in your heart, as you do these... You've got a wonderful dry sense of humour, and it's brilliant to watch you. You've got a natural flair for the lectures and the broadcasts on YouTube, and you really do. Again, I'm not just saying that. Are you positive? Do you still think that the glass is half full, or are we screwed?
I think if we can continue to try... The only reason I keep going with these videos is in the hope that I can catch enough people to be able to educate people with the facts from an alternative point of view that isn't a BBC government point of view. And all I do is try to give people facts. I try to make it entertaining and put in some gags and so on. But basically, what I'm doing is giving people facts and pointing out the obvious thing that less people globally have died of COVID-19 than have died of the flu in a similar sort of year. So it is not a major plague. And when you tell people these things, hopefully they will take away the ideas and go and talk to people, because that's the only way. Our big hope is to get enough people to say, I am not going to have a vaccine. I am not going to wear a mask. Because when you go in a supermarket and you're the only people there who aren't wearing masks, which happened to us today and the other day as well. But when you go in and you're the only people, then it does feel a bit lonely, and people need to go in a few, you know, in a group. But if and when the time comes that half the people in the supermarket aren't wearing a mask, then the others will feel pretty silly and they'll take their masks off too. And when you look at it with the vaccines, when people understand what the risks are and they can actually look and see the evidence, and the evidence does exist, I mean, there's plenty of it, But when you look at the evidence and you think, well, why am I having a vaccination against a disease which is really only much of a killer for the over 80s who've got a lot of other illnesses? Why am I having a vaccination that could kill me or could make me brain damaged or whatever it is? The risk, you've got to look at risk and you've got to look at things in perspective. And that's all I'm trying to do, is to provide people with the information. I'm not telling people don't have a vaccination. That would be impertinent of me and arrogant. What I'm saying is, look, these are the facts. The government says this. I say that. You make up your own mind. Look at what I've said. Look at what they've said and make up your mind. If you want to go and have the vaccine, that's your choice. Fine, go ahead and have it. I'm not going to be the bad person like they are. They say, you must have the vaccine. I'm saying, make up your own mind. Look at the evidence. Look at what I say. Look at what they say and decide which you think is the right thing to do for you. And that's all. It's just a question of education. And I hope enough people will say, well, yes, if the government really believes in vaccinations and they think Vernon Coleman's nuts, as Boris Johnson says, in maintaining his stance, then why don't they have a debate between Matt Hancock and Vernon Coleman? Both can put their point of view and the public can then see both sides. They won't do that. They won't allow a public debate. They won't allow a discussion because, as you said earlier, it's fixed. Everything's already settled in their minds. There's no need for a debate because they're right and those who disagree with them are wrong.
Thanks for coming back. It means a lot to me. It means a lot to my audience that you come back and speak with us. I really appreciate it. An old man in a chair on YouTube. No, thanks, sir. I really mean that. Your humility and decency shines through you, despite your experience and your achievements. You're incredibly humble. And I hope that the day will come when we'll see you on LBC or Talk Radio or Sky News opposite one of these people putting your points across. I really do hope that day will come. I look forward to the next time and I hope things are slightly better next time you are on. Again, Vernon Coleman, thank you so much.
Thank you, Richie. Thank you very much.
Gentlemen, Dr. Vernon Coleman live on the Richie Allen Radio Show this Wednesday, coming up for 7 minutes past the hour. If you haven't subscribed to the YouTube channel, please do. Incredibly qualified man, humble, as I said, in the extreme, and brilliantly produced videos challenging the official narrative, the government narrative about COVID, but also segueing into where this is going, you know, cashless society, smart agenda, the Internet of Things. These are important things, right? Okay, Miriam Hennane will be with me in a few minutes' time. But before we do that, I want to get headlines live from FSN in London, or maybe California. I don't know where they are today.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Rebecca Foster. Facebook, Amazon, Google, and Apple are taking a grilling from Capitol Hill Wednesday over the size of their companies. Russian officials say two leading potential vaccines for COVID-19 could be ready for widespread production as early as the fall. This as South Africa's coronavirus lockdown, the longest in the world, has hit 125 days.
Thanks, Rebecca Foster in Washington. I never know where they're going to be. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show. If you've just joined me, I want to say this because I said it the other day. I put an appeal out for some support for the program on Friday and you came through big style for me. Thank you very much. The program raised about £1,800 in a week and it was very much needed. So thank you. And I will get around to thanking you all individually. And if you don't get an email from me and you feel a bit put out by that as well, you might do drop me an email to say, Richie, I didn't hear from you. And I will get back on to thank you personally. Thank you. It means the world to me. I'll never use that term, donate, again. This is a full-time job and a full-time radio program. It needs support because it doesn't generate any advertising revenue. And when I put this appeal out on Friday, which I hadn't done for months and months because I hate doing it, you came through. Thanks a million. It means the bloody world to me. The program will never, ever be behind a paywall, no matter what. And that is not to be judgmental about those who do. I respect them as well. Everybody needs to eat. But I'm convinced that the program will endure because when the chips are down, when it needs a couple of bob, you will instinctively know that and you will send me £2 or £3 a month or whatever the bloody hell it is. And that's an enormous thing for me. So thank you again for listening to me last Friday and doing that. It took a bit of a weight off my shoulders. I went through the expenses of the programme before. I won't go through it again. It is fairly expensive on a monthly basis to put this together. And you heard me, so thank you. Right, here's the tune from the 1990s. It's a bit lovely and a bit ridiculous as well at the same time. It's Australia's Craig McLachlan, formerly of Home and Away and Neighbours. Yeah, and the song is called Mona, and I like it. Back with Miriam Hennane in a couple of minutes. It doesn't get any cheesier than this. Yeah, he played Henry in Neighbours. He played Henry. I'm old enough to remember that garbage. Craig McLachlan from Australia on the Richie Allen Radio Show. It's 12 minutes past the hour. I'm delighted my next guest is back on the programme. First time we met last year. A breath of fresh air. Great to have her on the programme. Hugely successful lady. A successful entrepreneur. I can say that word finally. I learned to say it. An investigative journalist and successful filmmaker. Originally, of course, from Canada, but these days she's based in Central America. It's a huge welcome back to the programme to Miriam Hennane. Miriam, welcome back. How are you?
Hello, Richie. So happy to be here. Thank you.
You see, you're a breath of fresh air. Immediately, the energy levels have just gone through the roof straight away. It's good to have you. So first of all, I'm going to shut up and you're going to tell us about the coronavirus situation and the response to it in Costa Rica. What's happening there?
Okay, I don't know when we last spoke, but I arrived here with Zach Voorhees, who now is back in San Francisco, on March 6th, feeling that something was going down in America, and then arrived, coincidentally, the same day that the Rona arrived here, so I got the pleasure of learning how to lavos mi manos in Espanol, and witnessing what for me cements the fact that this is, you know, an agenda that's being rolled out, a pandemic everywhere. So on two deaths, they were elderly from, I mean, they were older from America. They shut down the entire country. And arguably also, Zach had the Rona. We can't tell for sure, but a few days after arriving here, he was quite sick for 3 weeks with symptoms and took vitamin C, took silver, and I did not get sick, and he coughed on me. So just to show, you know, the real virus for me is one of fear and hate. And we do not, none of these health experts like Fauci the fraud or Dr. Birx ever mention the immune system. If anything, the only person I've heard say zinc is President Trump. So I'm not one of those. I'm not saying this is a hoax, meaning it's not a real virus. Some others are, and I respect their views because I'm open to other people's views. Doesn't mean I have to be a clone and agree with everything.
Yeah.
I think that it expresses itself differently based on your comorbidities, your age, and a lot of specifics, because the devil lies in the details and nobody's looking at these specifics. And so it's been interesting. They just introduced community spread here in Costa Rica, and they're doing a lot of the same thing that we're seeing in America and other parts of the world, where there's yanking going on, where they're playing psych. Oh, the curfew is at 5. No, the curfew is at 10. The beaches are only open till from 5 a.m. to 9:30 because the Rona is very smart and chooses to work after 9:30. Now they are opening August 1st, the beaches in the yellow zones until 2:30. So we are ecstatic because we've been watching the beach from afar. You can literally take a walk parallel to the beach, which is a corona-free zone, and the beach itself is off limits.
That's amazing.
So we're also seeing the masks, the mandatory masks. We're seeing the fear being pumped. I was looking to go look at a computer screen. They wanted to take the fever gun and point it at my third eye. And I also predicted back in February or March that they were going to weaponize the fever gun. They were going to criminalize the flu and the cough. I mean, the fever and the cough. So much so that I even asked ahead of time coming here to my functional medicine doctor, please write me a note because I suffer from low-grade fever. It doesn't mean I have the Rona. So now another thing is I'd like to establish that China is very much embedded, like in America, with Costa Rica. The word on the street is that the TICOs, the government, turns the other way and the Chinese do, you know, whatever they want to the biodiversity here, the Ministry of Health and the president. Now, interestingly, Secretary Pompeo a few days ago had a meeting with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs where they are trying to release themselves from the grips of China, which I find interesting because some people would say this is the 51st state. It is also very friendly with the U.S. Most foreigners come from the U.S. And also say this, the day that President Trump, May 29th, verbally and proverbially pulled out of the WHO, the same day Carlos, the president, launched a acceleration program with Tedros of the World Health Organization. Wow. Now, I say that he verbally said that because a few days later, a week later, there was a four-hour congressional hearing where Fauci and I believe Redfield said, quote, we're still working with the WHO in a very meaningful way. Now, since then, apparently, President Trump has officially pulled out. So on one hand, that's good. On the other hand, does that give more power to China, Bill Gates? And there also has been rumors. I found an article from 2014 where he did give money here in Costa Rica, Bill Gates. And there's talk that in the OSA region, he contacted a real estate agent. And it's a very biodiverse country. Sure, it's not big in geopolitics, but nonetheless, it still exemplifies, you know, the chummy nature of China with the president and also Bill Gates's tentacles. I play the sick game Where's Waldo, except I interpose the face of Bill Gates because he seems to be everywhere. Thank you for letting me spew that out.
No, it's good you spew that out. And I didn't realize that China was so involved in the affairs of Costa Rica. So thanks for telling me that. On Trump, and these days I'm fairly ambivalent about Trump. I see all world leaders as the same and ultimately serving the same agenda. You make a good point. Trump definitely said that he was pulling out of the World Health Organization. But sometime before he did that, his government agreed to give several billion dollars over 3 years to Gavi. Now, I'm not saying that Trump I'm not saying that Trump made that decision himself, but it is his administration. So to his and I know you're not a diehard supporter of anybody, let alone Donald Trump, but for his supporters who get annoyed that, you know, they think I keep bashing him. Yes, it's good to call out the World Health Organization, but if you're giving money to Gavi, well, that's not a good thing. What do we know about that, Maryam, the Trump administration?
Yeah, that is a rabbit hole I have not looked into other than to know there was money given to Gavi, which is Bill Gates. And as far as to say on Trump, I am not a hater of President Trump. I have watched this man more than any leader in my entire life every day. And I see the stupid things he says, like you know, you should not be bragging about being a ventilator king. We're killing people with the ventilators, and many of us have known that since February.
Is he right?
So on the other hand, you know, him trying to bring 90% of the pharmaceuticals are from China. There is an over-reliance on China. Him trying to bring that back to the country, bring back jobs, I am in support of that. Calling out, you know, calling it a China virus, I think is divisive when you realize, I believe, in my opinion, in my research, that for Diedrich was involved, the BSL-4 in Winnipeg was involved, Charles Lieber was involved, like it's the global elitists. And yes, maybe China didn't act in time, but that is all relative. Zach and I were calling out to close the airports in February. So yes, maybe from President Trump's point of view, he did make that call and it was early, but again, it's all relative. So I'm definitely not a hater, and I am, you know, if I were to vote, because this could all be political theater, especially Richie, when you realize that agencies like the CDC pay employees to watch soap operas.
Tell us about that. This is I've heard whispers about this. This is the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which is obviously a very important organization in the United States. It's a watchdog. Tell us about paying employees to watch telly.
Yeah, so that you look at the funders that are all compromised to the CDC. And then what made me go down this rabbit hole is that I watched Contagion and I assumed correctly that, of course, Hollywood consulted with the CDC. It's apparent, you know, you see the tension between the World Health Organization and the storyline with the CDC.
That's right.
I don't know if they consulted with the WHO. I'm making that assumption. But with the CDC, yes, they did. And then I learned that, and I've tweeted about this because I basically work for retweets and report live as I'm finding stuff and then create threads because the MSM doesn't take my stuff. So found that they pay their employees to watch soap operas. Now, growing up in the early 80s, I watched soap operas. There's a villain. They also have an integral role in storylines having to do with Grey's Anatomy, ER, anything that has to do with our health. So I find that a little bizarre, paying people to watch soap operas. Then there was also the millions of dollars that were allocated for this Hollywood wing, which I could dredge up the report, but basically that's it in a nutshell. So all that to say, we must just entertain that this might be all political theater. I would want nothing more. I do see President Trump doing some positive things. I do watch his body language. I do see how he is maligned. You can take HCQ as a perfect example and what's happening now. Like, he untweeted the tweet of Dr. Stella Emanuel, which is interesting.
Now, let's talk about that, Marianne, because when I announced you were coming on, today, you being you, and our listeners are aware of who you are, they wanted me to get into hydroxychloroquine, which I haven't touched on a lot over the last few months in the program because I don't know too much about it. This was an amazing sequence of events, wasn't it? The last 36 hours, 48 hours.
Yes.
So you have these real doctors. They've all done their degrees. They've all worked in hospitals. They've earned the right to an opinion. It's an educated opinion. And they get together and they talk about many things, including hydroxychloroquine. And now their videos, well, examples of that video has been taken down all over the place. The President of the United States has endorsed this. What is it? What is this hydroxychloroquine? Where does it come from? And why are we so invested in it? Why does Donald Trump repeatedly say this works, that it deals with this virus?
So I will, you know, I'm speaking as a journalist and as a functional medicine consultant. So I will share the information. I'm by no means an expert. I did download a Google doc, not that to plug Google, but a doc, a white paper of all the studies. So I will establish, for me, this would not be my go-to if I were consulting and working with a functional medicine doctor, because there's different ways to roam. I would maybe use curcumin. I would look at oxygen. I would tell your audience that, you know, respiratory illness is the fifth leading cause of death. So HCQ, one, it's been around for more than 50 years. It's traditionally used for lupus and arthritis. I reversed my lupus. I did not use HCQ. Now, from my understanding, it helps remove exosomes. It helps deposit zinc, especially if it's used with zinc. They also, they being the protocol, the doctors mention zithromycin. I'm pronouncing it wrong, but it's a broad spectrum antibiotic. I would not use an antibiotic, a broad spectrum, because we're living with an epidemic of antibiotic resistance. I would culture the person. It would have to be on an individual basis. Now, in 2003, there was a plague dead zone TV episode. This is 17 years ago, where someone condensed the show into 3 minutes, and it shows... They mentioned coronavirus, they mentioned masks, lockdowns, and they mentioned hydrochloroquine.
17 years ago.
17 years ago.
Wow, that's extraordinary. Well, is this on YouTube? We can get a link for this later on.
It's on YouTube. I can send you the link via Twitter, because I've tweeted it many times and provided it to someone I'm working with, as because we're trying to establish to the masses, because the main question, including from my mother, is how could the whole world pull this magic trick, right?
Yeah.
That this is like, but it's possible. So
can I just say, Marianne, sorry to interrupt you, just before you come back in and I'll get out of your way. The Dead Zone is a terrific novel by Stephen King, which was later a film with Christopher Walken, and then later on became a television series, which was run for a few seasons. And Marianne is saying, and if she's telling you this, she's telling you the truth, that 17 years ago, an episode dealt with coronavirus and hydroxychloroquine. And I mean, talk about predictive programming. I mean, this is astonishing news, this. Tell us more about it.
Right. So I will share that with you to share with on Twitter. So we established that. We know that it's been around. It's generic. There's more than 200 brands. That means Big Pharma is not making money off of it. So initially, in March, I believe, it was placed on EUA, Emergency Use Authorization. None of this stuff is FDA approved. It's all under the guise of safety, all under the guise of this is an emergency. So then in June, they removed hydrochloroquine, and they're pushing antivirals, one being remdesivir, where NIH, Fauci, the fraud, has patents, which is extremely comparatively expensive. And then you have Orange Man plugging hydrochloroquine, because this could help. Now, so again, I'm not into taking prescription drugs preventatively. But I do not throw the baby out with the bathwater. And it seems pretty evident that they are crucifying President Trump, and they have motives to not push this, to not allow this medication. So like in Oregon, it was banned. It's banned. I believe I heard that it was being made locally here in Costa Rica, and now it's become extremely hard to get unless you were already taking it for another condition, you know, like lupus.
Yeah.
Or there was another condition. Now, this is also used early on. So that's when best. Why did Andrew Cuomo make it prohibitable to not use and then allow it in the late stages? Why did The Lancet retract their information and basically straight up say that the data was fraudulent? This is The Lancet. For people who keep saying, you know, trust the science, there is a difference between science and scientism. And I have written about the faux faith of science to look, you know, again, we do not look at the details of who funded this study, What are the parameters of this study? How many days did it run? We don't look at the specifics, but here we have the Lancet straight up saying. So there's been a lot of talk. Didier Raoult in France is a big proponent of HCQ. People, I don't know if you saw the whistleblower. I believe her name is Erin. She's a contract nurse.
Yeah,
she's worked
yeah.
in Iraq, right? So she said she was in one hospital. They were following this protocol, which includes, for instance, putting people on oxygen, cannula, not ventilating them and forcing them into basically a coma. And using HCQ early on, there were no deaths. Then she goes to Elmhurst, which is lauded as a bastion of what health looks like. And basically this woman cements what a lot of us who've been on the forefront covering this, that many died, 37-year-olds, because one, imagine, you cannot go visit your loved one in the hospital. So you're alone, you have no support system. She has the doctors on record saying it's really it's not really worth it to save this person's life.
Yeah, that's right.
They are put on a ventilator. They are given not one sedative. I call it a miasma of swirling sedatives all together that have been shown or linked with having then neurological impact on the brain after the fact if you happen to survive. And sure, you could maybe survive. You have Andrew Cuomo, double nipple ring Cuomo, saying that people who go on the ventilator likely will not come out. Basically saying it's the final nail in a coffin.
Yeah, he said that. Yeah, he did.
So when people say, I know someone who died of coronavirus, okay, I want to see their dossier. What comorbidities did they have before? What were they treated with? Were they put on a ventilator? Like this 9-year-old in Putnam County that was described as the youngest woman, the youngest child in Florida. Well, I called the State Department and they tell me that she died of coronavirus-related complications. Sounds good, but what does that mean? Was she put on a ventilator? Now all of a sudden HIPAA matters when I say HIPAA out the window when you're talking about, in at least in California, all these people who have mental health issues that are zooming for, you know, to get their drugs. They say that their records or the calls might be shared, so therefore privacy is not respected. But in this case, for the 9-year-old, they could not tell me. And they basically said that we have to track and trace everyone that this 9-year-old. And we know by now that the numbers, they are irrelevant. Let's look at the fatality rates. So but back to HCQ, President Trump tweeted it. Then he was asked during the presser about this woman because the Daily Beast, Will Sommer, who's a smear writer, in record no time stated how she's talking about how you can get – she's talking about demons or aliens. It's taken out of – context.
They're painting her as a witch doctor, Maryam, aren't they? This is the African-American doctor who was amongst her name is Dr.
Stella Emanuel.
Yes, Stella Emanuel. She spoke very eloquently on the video with the other doctors. And today they've and yesterday they've really gone after her character. Just before you talk about that, let me do a very quick summing up.
Yes.
Not that you're not clear. You are clear, but this is hugely important information. We have the excellent Maryam Hanane live on the programme from Costa Rica. This is real investigative journalism. And what Maryam has been talking about in the last few minutes is what hydroxychloroquine is. This drug that's been around for a long time. It's been used to treat lupus. It's fairly harmless. Doesn't have really many side effects. It has demonstrated, it has been shown to be useful, fairly useful, when it's introduced to patients in the early stages of respiratory illness like coronavirus. It's fairly cheap because, as Maryam said, there are lots of generic versions of it around. So it would be very cheap. And of course, the alarm bells go off then. Big pharmaceutical companies don't like that. And it doesn't do them any good at all. She's talked about the nurse Erin, whom blew the whistle on how this was used effectively in a certain hospital, how it was withdrawn. And you've raised a number of very important points about people like Andrew Cuomo initially saying that the drug was useless and then saying that it could be used later on in a patient's treatment, even though later on it wouldn't be very good at all. Basically, what Mary-Ann has demonstrated is there is a lot of more than circumstantial evidence that this generic, very cheap treatment could be very helpful early on when people get this. She also made some brilliant points about how people are listed as having died of COVID. As an investigative journalist, Mary-Ann Hinnane wants to know, what were the comorbidities? What also was going on in the lives, you know, of those people? What other illnesses were they dealing with? And more importantly, she said, what other medications were they taking? These are the questions that the mainstream media should be asking, but they're not. If somebody is listed as dying of COVID, well, then they must have died of COVID. It's not the case. This is real journalism, real work you're doing there. I'm really impressed with this. This is massively important. No, no, I really mean that. So now we're back to this woman, Stella Emanuel.
Yes, let me say.
Go ahead, Jen.
So I saw her yesterday. I'm like, this is a firecracker. I want to interview her.
Yeah.
So I spent, I made various calls to the clinic and the blog was down. No one answered the messages. The phone, there was no voicemail. And then I saw the smear piece and her content, what she says, I'm down with. But then I wondered, is this woman now going to be used to poorly paint a Trump and to poison the narrative? I did make contact. I just tweeted it and I'm going to publish it on YouTube where I finally got through to the clinic. She's in Washington, D.C., and I hope to be able to interview her.
Brilliant.
We have to keep in mind that allopathic medicine is the third cause of disease. So again, where are the functional medicine doctors? Where are the people? We're, you know, then I will get into Operation Quack Hack, which I'm a part of, where there is and this is an FDA operation that's in conjunction with the Department of Justice, which in conjunction with the DOJ, which is, again, I say COVID, you know, COVID pass. With coronavirus, they, the elitists, these corrupt individuals are allowed or using to usher in whatever it is that they want, saying that people like me are profiting from coronavirus.
Yeah.
When you see all these tests, all these antibodies, all these things that have blossomed to make money, remdesivir, they're profiting from the coronavirus. So in regards to Stella, what I found also interesting is that Madonna, I'm part of a medical freedom group on Twitter and we support each other because we are shadow banned severely. Thanks, Jack. And one woman shared that on Instagram, Madonna was applauding Dr. Stella Emanuel. So that makes me scratch my head because just a few months ago, in March or early April, Madonna came out saying that she's donated $1 million to Bill and Melinda Gates to arguably help with the development of, you know, these vaccine wars. Is she now an anti-vaxxer? So this morning I contacted CAA and I contacted the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation press department. I posted the emails because I doubt that anyone will respond to me. But that's a little bit bizarre. Where does she stand, Madonna, now on this?
Massive flip-flop, really, in that short space of time. Can I just mention this, Mary-Ann? The BBC... Yeah. The BBC has just, in the last hour, dropped an article about Stella Emanuel, written by a guy called Dickens Olewe. I hope I pronounced his surname right. Dickens Olewe. This was dropped 49 minutes ago. bbc.co.uk/news. And if you look for Stella Emanuel, you'll get it. And the article claims, it mentions the Daily Beast, it claims that she is a doctor and certified by the Texas Medical Board. But it goes on to say that she founded the Firepower Ministries in Houston and that in a sermon, allegedly, but they haven't posted a video to the sermon, they say that she talked about alien DNA in medical treatments, and that scientists were cooking up vaccines to prevent people from being religious. I might not agree with that, but I don't find it that offensive, really. I don't see why it matters when we're talking about hydroxychloroquine. But they say that some of our other claims blame medical conditions on witches and demons. And that's all it says. That's the BBC. So they've decided
I saw the sermon, Richie.
Yeah.
I saw some of the sermons.
Did you? What do you think of it? What does it look like?
Well, it was actually a little bit shrill for me, her tone, that she's talking about Incubus and the one I saw about demons. So let's listen. We are way beyond anything is possible. We're living in the wild, wild west. Every single day we get shocked and we're expecting the aliens and Project Bluebeam. I mean, like, let's talk about this. I had a while, I'm a spiritual person, and I had a teacher, you could say. He's quite prolific. His name is Bernard Gunther, and he's been talking about the Matrix, and he talks about hyperdimensional entities. And he was telling me, you know, because I personally don't sleep around, it's just my choice. I'm not judging others, but yeah. He's like, sexually transmitted disease, how about sexually transmitted demons? So we are living in a time where we are entertaining the fact that we are run by Satan worshipers. That is, of course, I can have cognitive dissonance like, oh my God, I sound crazy. I can, you know, stand back and say, or this sounds crazy. Not I'm crazy. So is it that weird to think that when you have sex, let's say as a woman, you are absorbing that energy? They're clearly, she's out there. She also comes from Nigeria.
Yeah.
So the beliefs of the Nigerians, the beliefs of tribal people who are closer to the earth, they see things in a different way, a simplified way, but they definitely take into consideration the spiritual realm, which we can argue the heart, the spirit is kind of void when it comes to the COVID-19 task force. So again, was this woman used to poison Trump? Doesn't mean what she's saying is not valid. Why did Trump delete the tweet or untweet the tweet? And yesterday he said in the presser exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah,
what
it's she good, said, Marianne. I don't. Sorry to interrupt you. No, it's good. I'm sorry to. You're making a very good point here. This program has hosted people who talk about the things mentioned by Stella Emanuel in her sermon. And I'm not so arrogant as to think that I know anything about anything. So I'm very open-minded to these topics.
Yeah, and me too.
Like you are, and you very eloquently expressed that. I wouldn't imagine that this woman is mad because she talks about these things. Sadly, though, you and I can differentiate her religious and her deeply held beliefs about spirituality and about demonology, which I'm interested in, and we can put that to one side and see her as a doctor, a very smart woman who's used hydroxychloroquine and treated her patients. Sadly, though, the US press is going to use her as the example for everybody else. You just said this yourself, and they're loving this now because they can say, see, this woman is crazy. I don't think she's crazy because she is interested in demons.
I don't think she's crazy. And definitely, you know, I hope I get to interview her.
Me too.
And even explore these notions of the spiritual realm. There's an attack on the church. It seems to me, that's what I want to understand. Was she picked to be part of the consortium of doctors to later be smeared, and why this? I know it sounds like a minor point, but why is Madonna, who clearly was working with Bill Gates, now supporting her? I hope that I get a response. If she's become an anti-vaxxer now and realized that she's working for the devil, that would be great. Who knows? So, but
there's
an
irony, Marianne. There's a big irony there as well. I know you've noticed this. Madonna, whom, I mean, I grew up in the 80s like yourself.
Me too.
And we loved them. I mean, look, I'm a big rock fan. I love my rock music, but I'm going to confess, growing up, I had the Like a Virgin album. I had True Blue, the album, in 1987. I should be ashamed of my life for admitting this on the radio. But I had those albums. We love these pop songs, right? But in later years, a lot of occult symbolism started to appear in Madonna stage shows, right? So it's a great irony here, I think.
Yes, it is. And, you know, I remember doing choreographies to Borderline, she was an influence in my upbringing, along with Boy George and Cyndi Lauper and Duran Duran, and I didn't know better. Also, just to mention, early on, and I don't know if you were watching her Quarantine Diaries, she was working on a Corona typewriter. And then there was one instance, I don't think I've shared this with you, where she looks for her, she puts a fever gun to her temple, and then she looks at it and she says, 97.5, is that normal? And as soon as she said that, I'm like, wait a second, something. This is before she announced working with Billy Boy Gates.
Yeah.
I'm like, wait a second, that's strange, because before the coronavirus, I believe in January, Stanford University came out with a new study saying that 98.6 is no longer the average body temperature, that it is 97.5, so that they can arguably maybe say, oh, everybody has a fever. In any case,
right. Wow, I didn't know this. This is amazing.
This, you can look it up. This is the Stanford study. Stanford University came out with this. So then a couple days after that, she produces this video, which I think ends, this is again on Twitter, a globe that's like drenched in blood. And I tweeted, and I'm like, Madge, who's making these videos for you? Literally, you know, less than a week later, announces that she's giving $1 million to Bill and Melinda Gates.
Thanks for educating me. I didn't realize that they've decided to make the mean, see, I try to look clever sometimes, the average body temperature, the mean temperature, the average body temperature, they've lowered it from 98.6 to 97.5. And this, you've seen this Stanford. Why, the only reason they would do that was, would you can only imagine, would be to make it easier to prescribe somebody as being feverish. Obviously, why else would you do it?
Why else would you do it? Why do I need to get a fever gun shot at my on my forehead in order to buy a computer screen? You know, Zach returned to America. He hasn't been tracked or traced, or so I also wonder. He was also in Portland, and I haven't gotten a chance to speak with him. But he said that the, you know, the quote unquote riots that he went to, that they were 5% Antifa. And so there was a festive atmosphere, and there was 20 something year olds and people who are wanting to do something and vent their anger. So it made me think, like, well, of course, let's not be silly. Are both sides of the aisle in the media sensationalizing things? And that's what would make me want to go back to America, to be on the ground and to actually see what's happening. I mean, there's no doubt people are getting shackled under house arrest for having fever. Deaths are being misclassified. They're fudging the numbers. I don't look at the numbers anymore, knowing the predictive models were incorrect.
Yeah. They've admitted Maryam, in the UK, and I know you know this because you watch the UK. Well, they've admitted, the government admitted itself, that the counting of the deaths was seriously flawed, because they said that if somebody was to be diagnosed with COVID, and then 6 weeks later, unfortunately, they were to walk underneath a bus. This is the truth now. They admitted this to government. Their death would be listed as COVID.
I mean,
that's crazy.
Yes. They also had in the UK legislation, I don't know if it was a bill, but showing how they want to not have two people sign off on a death certificate.
That's right.
Arguably, so that they can just, they're fast tracking things. It's McMedicine, and you even have Burks on camera saying that they're going to classify it. Everything under the sun. You have, as soon as Florida opened up, I'm like, okay, watch. They're going to punish these red states. And then they can play with the numbers. Like here in Costa Rica, for the longest time, it was hovering at 26, 31 deaths. And then it jumped one day, 100 new deaths. This, and then they say, oh, because we're, you know, we're backlogged and it's to count the numbers. Oh, how convenient. You guys, it's just like in magazine writing. I give this analogy. If you look at magazines, they would always have like big numbers, like 151 ways to allure your man.
Yeah.
You know, they use the numbers and people fall for that, for them. This is sorcery. Pharmacia means sorcery.
I didn't know
this
that. I didn't know that pharmacia meant sorcery. My days in Spain, I didn't realise that. We've got Maryam Hinnane live on the line from Costa Rica. We've got about 3 or 4 minutes left, and obviously I'll give you the final word as well. Maryam mentioned Zach a moment ago. That is Zach Voorhees, who was on this programme. Another terrific bloke, great guy, Google whistleblower, gave us a great interview a year and a half or 2 years ago. Courageous man, and he is Maryam's lesser half these days. I should say better, lesser half. Top guy, and he's in the US at the moment. Hopefully his travels will be safe there. Because we could have gotten into the George Floyd incident, the death of him and everything.
Oh yeah, so much to say.
Well, we will real soon. I mean, this is not going away. So in the next couple of weeks or even very early in September, well, because I'm going to have a break, I suppose, towards the end of August. We'll get you back on and we can do that. But I did have Dr. Vernon Coleman, Dr. Vernon Coleman, of course, on the programme in the first there. And I'll ask him the same, I'll ask you the same question I put to him.
Yeah.
Is the glass half full for you? Or do you think that we've gone beyond the point of no return and that the people behind this agenda are going to see it through? Is there any hope for us, do you think, as people?
I look at things half full, and I am not going to be infected by the virus of hate and fear. So I will stand, you know, I've been making these videos to kind of educate people, but also to have fun and transmutate all this negativity. So I think it's still up to us. I mean, it's pretty clear we are the silenced majority, I believe. As far as Zach, I think for me, being able to have someone who's also as interested and to have that be an intel force, I really miss that, miss him. And I'll just say, as far as George Floyd, that let's just keep in mind this hashtag, I can't breathe. Let's keep in mind that George Floyd said, I can't breathe, 3 times in the vehicle and is the one who asked to be placed on the ground.
And I can't dispute that. I mean, it's so bizarre now when we look back on it, because we can look back now with, I don't know, wider eyes. We can look back with a more, kind of a more rational approach to it, because it was so contentious at the time. And there seemed to have been so much going on then that we can see now around the death of George Floyd that I really don't know what to think, to be honest.
I think it's a psyop.
You think it's a psyop, don't you? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. How about the black man that just was killed in broad daylight for just holding a vote for Trump sign?
Yeah.
How about his black life? How about the millions they're raising under the guise of George Floyd?
And funny you mention that now, because I've spent a lot of time, I suppose, criticizing Trump, but only because he's the president. It would be the same with Obama or George W. Bush. But it's got to be said that I've criticized Trump for not fulfilling campaign promises. But this afternoon, his defense secretary has announced that they're pulling nearly 12,000 troops out of Germany. Some of them will go to Denmark, apparently, but many of them will come home. Now, I don't know what that means, but Trump's supporters might say to me, well, there you go, Richie. There's proof that he is somehow living up to that. You know, he's pulling back from NATO. That happened today. I don't know what to make of it, but I'm not a lawyer and I'm not, you know, obtuse. If Trump is genuinely pulling troops out of NATO, if he's pulling troops away from Russia, away from the satellite states around Russia. I shouldn't call them satellite states. That's a good thing if it happens. But anyway, listen, final word to you. We've got about 60 seconds. Folks, if you go to YouTube, you'll find Miriam Hanane's channel. If you put her name in, you'll get the Honey Colony channel. Lots and lots of videos on there. If you put Miriam's name into YouTube, you'll see a lot of very interesting interviews that she's done with other broadcasters and presenters as well. And if there is a website that you'd like our listeners to visit, Miriam, do give it a mention now. Final word to you. And I meant what I said at the top of the hour. You're a breath of fresh air. And you bring
Thank
the energy
you,
up any room that you enter. The energy goes
Thank
up.
Thank you, Richie. I mean that, appreciate yeah. that so much. I would just say, yes, come to YouTube. It's Miriam Hanane, B-Lady. And please, please follow me on Twitter. I am really shadow banned. And the website, my website that's under attack under Operation Quack Hack is honeycolony.com. I'm any dirt you want to share, I promise anonymity. I love nothing more than expose corruption.
You're brilliant. At Miriam Hanane on Twitter. Regards to Zach, of course, when you speak to him, Miriam. And I look forward to speaking to you again real soon. Godspeed to you. Look after yourself.
Godspeed to you too. Blessings, Richie. Thank you.
It was an honour, as usual. Lovely lady. Very, very smart. Miriam Hanane. And that's the Twitter handle. Miriam Hanane. All one word on Twitter. And that was basically Wednesday's Richie Allen radio show. Thanks to Miriam again. And to the lovely Dr. Vernon Coleman for sharing his time with us in our one as well. A man in a chair. An old man in a chair on YouTube. If you haven't watched the presentations before, well, it's priceless stuff, really. This exceptionally experienced and talented man worked in medicine, broadcasting, journalism, writing, sharing his life experience and how he applies that life experience to evaluating coronavirus and the crazy measures that have been imposed on us in order to alleviate it. He's great. Two top guests. Thank you for joining me today. Now, I'm pretty sure I'll be with you tomorrow, but I have to launch this new website for richieallen.co.uk, and I really need to spend a few hours with Hayden Hewitt, and I really need to do some photographs for it. So I'm not sure. I said this a few weeks ago, and I still did the Thursday Richie Allen show anyway. So I probably will be with you. In the event I'm not with you tomorrow, and I think I will be, I'll do a show Friday afternoon. I don't know what's going to happen. I'll let you know on social media tomorrow. Anyway, closing out with Bruce Springsteen and a song called Tucson Train from last year's album, Western Stars. This is beautiful. Think of Glen Campbell. This is really lovely. Speak tomorrow then. Bye for now.